Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid.
Well, what lovely timing. We seem to be having some issues with some buffering going on right now. I'm not sending the stream. My apologies. Let me mess around with this for a couple of minutes. Kill the music, Bob. This'll take just a second. Damn it. Don't know why that happened, but it did. Stand by, please. All right. Well, at least the recording will have the intro in it. Good evening, everyone. 4 minutes past the hour. I don't know why we just buffered up like we did, but we did. And we've been having some streaming server issues all day, and there were some issues. Ben Birch had to reboot the Horn server earlier in the day, and hopefully we won't have that buffering again anytime soon. So, yeah, a little help from the chat room if you guys want to... Are we reaching? Thank you. Thank you, Sparky. Yeah. I show that we're going out fine and dandy. Okay. All right. All right. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, everybody in the chat room. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. I'm a little bit scatterbrained, I guess. We had such a rousing Jim Dandy conversation with Dr. Bill there in the second hour of his program. And I think the questions he's asking and attempting to answer are among the most important that face our country and perhaps globally today. And it's always fun to engage in that kind of a dialogue with Dr. Bill. As you know, he is a fascinating conversationalist and a really superior listener, and can pull out the essence of a discussion, well, in ways that very few people can. So that leaves us now at 6 minutes past the hour with our own little job that we do here every Monday evening. Of course, you know, headonradionetwork.com is our home. You know that. You know that if you're on a mobile device, that apps like Stitcher and TuneIn can be very, very effective and helpful. You know that, of course, well, some of you, if you're new to the program, maybe you don't. Wander on over to the chat room, headonradionetwork.com. Just click on chat room. There you go. What else? Yeah. How we keep all of this going? Well, it's listener contributions. You know that. And we have on the table this evening a challenge from Randy, We find ourselves with a fundraising goal tonight of $215, and Randy has put forward a challenge of 50 of that. He will match the first 50 that comes in. So thank you very kindly, Randy, and hopefully folks will respond to that. And it's always tough when we begin the week in a hole, and this is the downhill run toward the end of February. And February being a shorter month, it means there's, you know, well, you get the idea. So the challenge is on the table. Thank you very much. And hopefully we will round up $215 by close of program. And that way we'll just have the rest of the week to finish up the rest of the fundraising. So, cool. Also, of course, you can always contribute by way of the United States Postal Service, traditional over the ground, through the air, over the river, and through the woods kind of mail service. And if you want to do that, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Gentle reminder, please don't make anything payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not receive the funds. This is all a matter of us paying bills and keeping stuff on the air. So there, we've gotten that all taken care of, my least favorite part of the program. This is, of course, well, you know what it is, beyond the 24th day of February 2014, and this sprint toward the end of February, which I think has been the longest February that I can recall in many and many and many a year. All the snow is gone, but it may not stay that way. I saw something earlier today about we're going to get some more polar express, polar vortex, polar misery, whatever. Yeah. Oh, goody. Right. But we will end February on Friday. And then March will, looks like, come in like a lion. Of course, with climate change, you know, farmer's almanac sayings, whatever, you know, march in like a lion, out like a lamb, in like a lamb, out like a lion. Those became stereotypical of the weather insofar as they generally were said over the course of generations to be fairly accurate. I don't know if with climate change, those models stay true. So I seem to recall in the last couple of years a march that came in like a lion and went out like a lion and was just a lion all the way through. Lion bastard. I don't know. But it looks like we may be getting some march in like a lion come Saturday. So, high of 39 and a low of 19 hereabouts, and partly sunny, partly cloudy skies for Saturday. And that's still, and yeah, Thursday, low of 16. Wednesday, low of 14 here. That's still a little bit unseasonably cold for ass end of February. The weather. But it is, more than anything else, oh dear God, Moran Monday. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And that means this is one of the funnerest days of the week around here. That's right. Step right up. Hurry. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you'll hear Morans beyond your ability to comprehend. Right-wing Morans, libertarian Morans, repiglic and Morans, teabagging Morans, birther, deather, tenther, booger-eating Morans, one and all. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, for only less than 5 cents per hour of radio programming, you too can witness the bizarre, the hateful, the mean, the spiteful, the disgusting, the revolting, the bigoted, the misogynistic, the racist, the prejudiced, the Morans in all their infamy. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, I'm not kidding either. I hardly know where to begin. But the thing is, when you hardly know where to begin, why not Tennessee? Yeah, this is a real Lulu. Or Mississippi. Mississippi Stan. Any of the Confederacy Stan states. But apparently over to Tennessee, they not only don't like for workers to be represented by unions, they don't like folks knowing about the sex, neither, even if they're already in the University of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Outrage, I tell you, outrage is burbling along through the miserable, knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing, strychnine-swigging, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking, tea-bagging right-wing into yes, indeedy. From March 2nd, thank you, Devin. Can't leave out the booger eaters. There's booger eaters, booger eating morons behind that thin cybernetic veil of canvas, too. Thank you very kindly, Devin. March the 2nd through the 7th marks the annual Sex Week. Clutch the pearls. At the University of Tennessee, there on the banks of the Tennessee River in Fair Knoxville. And they'll have things like relationship workshops and a sex trivia game and discussions about pornography, transgender sexuality, something I don't understand called the hookup culture. And last year, they had their first sex week at the University of Tennessee, which got the fogies all in a lather, because among other things, they had a lesbian bondage expert. And they had a drag show. I know. Heaven forfend. A drag show? Goodness me. Right. Lesbian bondage? Now, wait a minute. And representing Richard Floyd, who is a pig licking from Chattanooga, you know, down there where they don't even want a workers' council at the VW plant that every other VW plant on Earth has, even Mexico. Yes, absolutely.
They don't want one of them. It's probably communism.
VW and VW's union wants everybody to have a say in the workings of the plant. It actually kind of makes a little bit of sense. But no. The politicians in Tennessee don't want the workers having no workers' council, because, you know, if they were supposed to be on a council, that means they'd be a boss now, wouldn't they? And they wouldn't be down there working on the assembly line. Don't you understand? Yeah, old times here are not forgotten. Look away, Dixieland. Mm-hmm. No, really, every Volkswagen plant in the world has a workers' council. Except for the one in Chattanooga. Really, I mean, do you find that a little teensy, tiny bit embarrassing? You know, not that you're from Tennessee or anything, but a little bit embarrassing as an American? That there's a workers' council at the VW plant in Mexico? At the VW plant in Germany? Say, a VW plant in Brazil? But not in... Hell, in China, for all we know. Remember, Volkswagen is Europe's largest auto manufacturer, and they have set their sights on becoming the world's largest auto manufacturer in fairly short order. Hence the growth, hence the plant in Mexico and the plant in Chattanooga and everything. But they're going to do it on something that they're trying to create in the way of a level playing field. Because, see, lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of research into industrial dynamics, industrial processes, systems analysis, shows that when people who work in the plant have a say-so in the workings of the plant and safety issues and things like that, so when it's not all top-down, but every now and then a little bit goes from the bottom up, that you wind up having a better, more successful plant. But the pig lickens in Tennessee don't want none of that. They're not going... No, because, well, you know, they'll find... Volkswagen in Mexico will find out soon enough. You know, you have that workers' council, and they just get uppity. Next thing you know, how are you going to keep them? Oh, dear God. But we weren't even talking about that. No, we were talking about Sex Week at the University of Tennessee, which has Richard Floyd from Chattanooga right up say it. Now, he threw a hissy last year after the first Sex Week and got $25,000 pulled from funding for the event. The event is sponsored by Sexual Empowerment and Awareness at Tennessee, which spells SEAT. But we can't be having none of that sexual awareness. I mean, whatever kind of sex has been, it's been good enough for Paul and Silas, and it's good enough for me, right? Well, that's the position of, and I probably should not say position, of Richard Floyd, a Repiglican from Chattanooga. He even introduced a non-binding House resolution over there in the Tennessee State House because they're all sitting around in indolent boredom with nothing better to do than worry about whether or not kids at college are having sex. Hint, they are. But, well, like I said, pulling the $25,000 from the event wasn't enough because obviously they went ahead and decided to have their second annual Sex Seat Week. It's disgusting, isn't it? Student activity, because SEAT is a legitimate student organization on the campus of the University of Tennessee at Knoxville, they get some student activity fees money. I mean, just the same as, say, the fundamentalist, strychnine-swilling, floor-rolling Christian Association does. They get some student activity fee money, too. But that's not the kind of world that Richard Floyd wants to live in. Mm-mm, no, sir. Uh-uh, no how. And now, after Floyd has had his hissy, there are other bills pending in the Tennessee General Assembly that would try to make sure that no student fees, which are paid, oddly enough, by students who will probably be paying interest on the fees they've paid forevermore, to make sure that only the right kind of guest speakers can get student activity fees, and certainly none of them drag queens, don't you know? We will consider lesbian bondage experts in a separate executive session, don't you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Senator Todd Gardenhaw, also a Chattanooga down there where they don't want their workers getting uppity and having no counsel like they got down in Mexico. Gardenhaw said, well, I'm sorry if the University of Tennessee Chattanooga students feel the impact of this here bill, but they need to focus on where the cause of this is. Maybe they need to march up from Chattanooga up to Knoxville and maybe besiege the university and whoop some sense into them. Wait a minute, that might be part of that there lesbian bondage. I don't know. Gardenhire says his first bill is a compromise bill that would compel public educational institutions to award funding for guest speakers based on the size of student organizations. Well, what does that mean if SEAT should happen to wind up being a 10,000-member organization? Well, obviously that big, you don't need much money now, do you? Hmm? Now, see, look over there. The poor little old University of Tennessee Snake Handling Strychnine Swigging Association ain't got two members. Let's give them $10,000. The president of the University of Tennessee Chattanooga is Robert Fisher, and he says, I believe that higher education should force you to challenge your views. That's part of the experience. It's part of intellectual honesty, giving yourself the chance to hear what you don't want to hear as well. And oddly enough, Senator Gardenhire and representing Floyd, they don't want to hear none of that. And they don't want to hear nothing about drag queens and, maybe a little bit about the lesbian bondage, but they don't want to hear nothing about relationship workshops. I mean, everybody knows the way a relationship works is a man marries a woe man, and he goes off to work, and she stays home and has babies. There, what you need a workshop for that for, huh? And sex trivia games? Mm-mm, no, we don't need the asking none of them questions either. So here's what it boils down to. Last week, Representative Floyd Dunn said, people in my district are fed up with the perversion. Down there in Chattanooga, they're fed up with the perversion. And he's not talking about the perversion of treating workers like crap. Now, that's not perversion. That's the way God intended. People in my district are fed up with the perversion. Almost makes you want to take a field trip to Chattanooga to find out what kind of perversion's going on. Latex wetsuits? Self-asphyxiating masturbatory? No, this is not the time for me to play dildo for Montgomery. People in my district are fed up with the perversion. If those people who organize this thing want to have it, hey, let them get off campus. They can go out there in a field full of sheep if they want to and have all the sex week they want. Representing Floyd? I don't know if you noticed this, but there wasn't nothing on the sex week agenda about sex, about you know, bestiality or having sex with sheep. You're the one who brought it up, you fine, upstanding, God-fearing Christian. Is that representing Floyd over there? Yeah, that's Dad. Now, what? Oh, my goodness. The guy with the moral purity is the one who brings up having sex with farm animals. Sure would be nice to have a talk with some of them folks that send Representative Floyd to the Tennessee State House. Maybe find out a little bit about what's going on down there in Chattanooga, where the first thing that comes to mind for him is getting it on with a sheep. I am in love with a sheep. All this over display tables and lectures at college. Now, I'm sure, I have no doubt whatsoever, that if they wanted to have themselves a no-sex week or an adopt-a-snowflake baby week, or any of that sort of thing, I'm sure Representing Floyd would be sitting there with a shovel to throw money at him out of the student activity fees, because, you know, that's the kind of thing I want to hear about up at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. Let them get off campus, he says. So we have a clear understanding, do we not, that in the right-wing, repig-licking, teabagging, earther, deather, tenther, booger-eater world of Representing Floyd, that any speech he doesn't like needs to be away from his understanding or his knowledge or even hearing about it of its existence. Right. Sometimes I get the feeling that whoever that courier was that was supposed to ride throughout the land and disseminate the brand spanking new constitution didn't do such a dang good job. I mean, Tennessee comes along pretty quick after the founding of the adoption of the Constitution. I mean, Tennessee, what, 1791? Statehood? Oh, I've forgotten. I mean, I'm thinking the ink would have been dry. Yeah. I mean, goodness gracious. I'm sorry, 1795, there was enough people in Tennessee to make it a state. And in a ballot, by 3-1, people voted to become a state. So, as of June 1st, 1796, the Congress of the United States agreed to admit Tennessee to the Union as the 16th state. So they've been around for a while. But somehow or another, in the educational process, apparently abandoned or somehow left untouched representing Floyd, they didn't get that whole marketplace of ideas, First Amendment, free speech. Because, see, representing Floyd wants to live in a world where the government can kick off of the campus of a government institution, you know, owned by the people and everything, ideas that it don't like. How nice. By the way, thank you very much, everyone who just jumped in to respond to Randy's More In Monday challenge. Thanks to Beth, and thanks to Asa, and thanks to Kristen, and thanks to Glenn. We have met and exceeded that challenge, and we are now on the way to actually meeting the whole evening's fundraising goal. Thank you very, very kindly. Special note coming in, and this touched me deeply. Special note coming in from Kristen. Considered the last living link to Dr. George Tiller in Kansas, I appreciate and value your head-on radio network. Keep up the good work. I treasure those words, Kristen. Thank you very much. Dr. Tiller. I will never understand why Bill O'Reilly is still on television instead of cooling his heels, maybe in Leavenworth or somewhere, for inciting that murder. Thank you, Kristen. Thank you all very much. Jim, by email, summoning something apropos to the moment, namely Colonel Bat Guano, if that really is your name, from Dr. Strangelove. Now, don't try any of the commie pre-versions, Mandrake. That's Coca-Cola Company property. All right, I'll shoot the lock off. But if you're not who you say you are, you're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola Company. So you might get the idea that we are off to a rousing start on this More In Monday. And that's only because we are. So we've been in Tennessee. Let's travel up the road a little ways from Knoxville to the common border that Tennessee shares with the Old Dominion, Virginia, where they've got themselves a state senator by the name of Steve Martin, who is not at all funny. Wrong Steve Martin. Steve Martin is the former chairman of the Senate Education and Health Committee. And last week, he took to his Facebook wall. Somebody needs to. Well, I mean, I guess it's all well and good that they put this stuff out there so that we can see them for who and what they are. But really, somebody needs to do some splaining about the whole Facebook thing. Oh, goodness me. It turns out, and of course, it's always somebody else's fault when it's a repig licking, because after all, personal responsibility is for us and not them. And Steve Martin got himself all head up, because somebody who believes in the rights of women to take care of the doings of their own insides sent him a Valentine's Day card. And Steve Martin took to his Facebook to explain, "I received a Valentine's card today with a two-tone red heart on the front above the words, 'Don't break our hearts.' Inside was the following message: on behalf of women's health advocates across Virginia, we are disappointed in your record of voting to restrict access to critical health care for women and families. All women deserve access to their full range of reproductive health options, including preventing unintentional pregnancies, raising healthy children, and choosing safe legal abortion. And your votes only make it more difficult for Virginians to plan and provide for their families. We are watching your actions closely and hope that you will reconsider your position on this critical issue. Please don't break our hearts." Signed, the Virginia Pro-Choice Coalition. Now, before I go any further into the mad scrawls of the very unfunny Senator Steve Martin, I will call upon you to note that at no point in time did the Virginia Pro-Choice Coalition call him a strychnine-swigging, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking, knuckle-walking freak, or a rotten woman-hating bastard, or such a sorry piece of human proto-flesh that it's hard to imagine that he ever actually emerged from a human womb. They didn't say any of that stuff to him, all of which he would deserve to have said to him. They were very nice, and they said, "Please," and they said, "Don't break our hearts." Well, Steve Martin responds, "How very heartwarming, all while using ill-defined terms. Raising healthy children in the context of access to abortions speaks only to the ability to kill unhealthy children. Do they not see the sickness of that argument?" Now, see, nobody called him sick. But since he doesn't have to be personally responsible for anything, he feels it absolutely okay to call. I mean, whatever happened to that? Whatever happened to that gentlemanly code of conduct that used to obtain down in the Old Dominion? Calling ladies sick. If it's your expectation that I should support such nonsense, I will be breaking your heart. You can count on me to never get in the way of you preventing an unintentional pregnancy. I'm not actually sure what that means, because it's unintentional. Because if it's unintentional, you must have been trying to prevent it. And I don't expect to be in the room, or I will do anything to prevent you from obtaining a contraceptive. However, once a child does exist in your womb, I'm not going to assume a right to kill it just because the bearer of the child, some refer to them as mothers, doesn't want it to remain alive. Hoo-wee! Once upon a time, that could get you called out in the state of Virginia, and there might be some pistol play involved. Some of you, some refer to them as mothers. We finally get to the truth at the end of that same line. What they want is access to safe legal abortions, anytime one might be desired. Honey, could you go down to the Rippy Mart and get me a pack of donuts and a Coca-Cola and a safe legal abortion? I find myself suddenly desiring one. Anytime one's desired. You know, whether she's pregnant or not, for some women, it's just recreational. The assumptions these assholes make. Okay, then, why did you write all of the rest of that Bologna? He did learn how to spell Bologna. He doesn't spell it B-A-L-O-N-E-Y. He spells it B-O-L-O-G-N-A. About raising healthy children by killing the unhealthy ones, Perrin. Having access to health care, which you do, and preventing unwanted pregnancies, don't have unprotected sex.
Huh?
Such nonsense supposed adults have written to celebrate love on Valentine's. These folks are really sick people. So in the first paragraph and the final paragraph, he refers to these decent human beings who wrote him quite respectably as being sick for merely expressing their political position. So, this guy, among other things, in the Senate of the Old Dominion, voted for transvaginalism. And he's voted to make fetuses as much or more a human being than the ones that are out here in the world. The human beings are out here in the world breathing and trying to drink clean water once in a while and scraping and scrambling and struggling to survive from day to day to day. Yeah. He edited his Facebook post, by the way. He changed his Facebook post from reading, it referred to a mother as a host, and he changed it to say, bearer of the child. Host. Host. Well, I guess we can say what? Is he a little bit more enlightened because he didn't say hostess? Kind of like how there's no longer actors and actresses. We just recognize that everybody's an actor. Host. Charming. This guy will go far. You may rest absolutely assured. Oh, yeah, Jan, this guy is a big moron. That's why he's high on the nomination list. And something Todd and Kathy are pointing out in the chat room. Come on by the way, if you want to. You know why he spelled it B-O-L-O-G-N-A instead of B-A-L-O-N-E-Y? I just about bet you. My baloney has a first name, it's O-S-C-A-R. My baloney has a second name, it's M-A-Y-E-R. And I love to eat it every day, which is why if you ask me why, I'll say that Oscar Mayer has a way with B-O-L-O-G-N-A. And that's the only damned reason in the world this freak knows how to spell B-O-L-O-G-N-A. Nice point by Texas T in the chat room. Doesn't the host also tell you when to leave the party? Yep. Yeah. But it's more in Monday, so that means there's lots of them. Let's talk about Milton Wolf. He comes from Kansas Stan, and he's running in the Republican primary to run in the general election for Senate from the state of Kansas Stan. But here's the interesting thing: he's running against Pat Roberts from Kansas Stan, whom no one has ever accused of being a wild-eyed, Marx-quoting liberal. I mean, Pat Roberts, really? This guy doesn't get any weirder or right-wingier. And it's kind of a barometer that there's enough people, and this guy's a teabagger, of course. They're out to completely transform their party into some sort of a claven of babbling, incoherent fools. He has apparently got some sort of access, Milton Wolf does, to X-rays. And like his buddy Steve Martin, now they're not buddies, but you know what, if you got them in the same room, they'd be sitting there toasting the fetuses before you could say boo. He's got his buddy Steve Martin over in the old Dominion. They've got that same Facebook disease where whatever it is that comes into their tiny those thin gray settlings that slosh around between their ears and otherwise pass for brains, whatever pops into it, they just go and put it on the Facebook. And in the case of Milton Wolf, is he a doctor of some sort? Apparently, he got he had access to, and he must be a doctor of some sort, he got access to X-rays, because X-rays, and especially the X-rays that he was got hold of, are particularly funny. Because Milton Wolf posted X-rays on his Facebook page of dead people. This from the Topeka Capital Journal. Yes, he's a radiologist. So that means he's been sitting around chuckling over these for a while. Back in 2010, Milton Wolf posted X-rays of people who had been killed. The Topeka Capital Journal reporting. Wolf and others viewing these Facebook postings relentlessly poked fun at the dead or wounded. The gunshot victim, Wolf joked online, wasn't going to complain about the awkward positioning of his head for an X-ray. Then in a separate Facebook comment, Wolf wrote that an X-ray of a man decapitated by gunfire resembled, he looks like a wounded alien in the Terminator movie. And then he said, well, I guess people, quote, find beauty in different things. He found beauty in a photograph of a person whose head had been stitched off his body by gunfire? Naturally, Milton Wolf, hero, declined to be interviewed by the Topeka Capital Journal after they found the images of dead people on his Facebook page. They went so far as to show him copies of the Facebook posts, and he said, well, I want to keep these. I really, really want to keep these. But when they said, no, we're sorry, you can't, well, he walked off in a huff. And in refusing to answer any questions about his gruesome fetish, he said, I'm not going to play these kind of gotcha games. Can we have a conversation about that whole gotcha thing? I mean, ever since Godzilla from Wasilla put the whole thing out there into the currency of the language. How is it gotcha when you're the one who posts the pictures of people with gunshot wounds, X-rays of people with gunshot wounds? How is it gotcha when somebody asks you why you would do such a sick, gruesome, and otherwise medically unethical, insensitive thing with somebody's private personal data. Well, here comes the non-apology apology as of yesterday. Several years ago, I made some comments about these images that were insensitive to the seriousness of what the images revealed. Soon thereafter, I removed those images and comments, again, several years ago. For them to be published in a much more public context now by a potential adversary who would rather declare war on doctors than answer serious questions that Kansans have is truly sad. See, it's Pat Roberts' fault, because Pat Roberts is some kind of liberal who's got a war on doctors. You know, that's how it is with these right-wingers. It's got to be war on something. The eliminationist streak runs so damn deep with them, they can't resist the war analogy. Now, here's a guy making fun of somebody who's had his head stitched right off by gunfire, and he thinks that the person who's pointing out that he made fun of that is at war with doctors generally because he, a doctor individually, was criticized. Meanwhile, the National Republican Senatorial Committee said Dr. Wolf's behavior is freakish. That's not me. That's the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. And when the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee says somebody's freakish, man. Because the entire Repiglican membership of the United States Senate is freakish. If you can rise above, if you can be the sort of toxic cream that rise to the top of that, whew, I mean, you're freakish with a capital F. He does have some backing, however, Wolf does. The Senate Conservatives Fund are the ones out there going after Roberts, and they're giving Teabag and Wolf the backing. He's got a bit of a history. X-ray Milty does. Uncle Milty with his X-rays. It was, goodness me. How far back when Milton Wolf compared Barack Obama with Hitler and Mussolini? Yeah, the whole sort of rolling Tourette's, Hitler Tourette's, Nazi Tourette's thing has reared its ugly head again. And he did this on his Twitter account, @MiltonWolfMD. Other than killing Jews, what domestic policy of the Nazis do today's American liberals oppose? Other than killing Jews. We don't support killing homosexuals. We don't support the elimination of the differently abled, Dr. Wolf. Where did you get that MD degree? Out of a gumball machine, you dumb bastard? We don't support invading Poland. We don't support invading Russia. We don't support the indiscriminate bombing of Britain. We don't support the invasion of France. I mean, that's just off the top of my head. Other things besides killing Jews that American liberals, right, oppose. And let's see, before that he had said, scapegoats of history, Hitler, Jews and Gypsies, Mussolini, Jews and Bolsheviks, Obama, successful Americans. Really? Yes, really. You know, teabaggers.
You dick!
I think so. here's the laugh line. He is a distant cousin of Barack Obama. You may recall that Barack Obama's half of his family tree comes from Kansas. Yeah. Jesus, God. And he's been out there hustling his teabagging credentials and his opposition to the Affordable Care Act. And now it turns out he thinks that x-rays of people who've been blown away in America's shooting gallery are... Well, it's funny. Nobody, this guy's not going to complain about how we posed his head. It does kind of make me wonder, but never mind. Never mind. Like I said, it's going to be a busy night. Huh. So we have reached pretty much the end of this evening's filibobster, and I welcome you one and all for your Moore and Monday nominations. We've got one coming in from Jay, who says Moore and nomination, the entire Arizona legislature. Well, you know, like maybe minus one, Jay, because one of the right wing hooligans who voted for the basically gay apartheid bill in Arizona has now said, well, I mean, I voted for it and everything, but I sure do hope Governor Brewer will veto it. I'm trying to mend my ways here. I mean, see, I did what I needed to do, and I played to my stupid knuckle-dragon, mouth-breathing, bigoted, prejudiced, upstanding, God-fearing Christian base, and now that I've done that, and I recognize from the other Republicans that this is going to have a tremendous financial impact on me, and the Chamber of Commerce gave me a call and asked me, did I not like being senator very much? Well, I sure do hope old hatchet face, I mean Governor Brewer, vetoes the law that I voted for. Please. Pretty please. I mean, when you've got George Takei pissed off at you, you know you've really screwed up. Because, you know, George took to the social media to say, okay, you don't want to serve. You don't want to serve the gay in restaurants. Why don't we all just stay away from Arizona, and you can just have all the, absolutely. You can have the whole state to yourself. Good luck. Stupid, 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 stupid people. I do hope that that woman, Jan Brewer, vetoes this thing, because at a most basic level, I don't even want to see something like this have to even be challenged in court. Because remember, if it ever goes to the Supreme Court, there's a chance it could survive. You know, you could get maybe Slappy Thomas for once authoring an opinion and saying, well, you know, it's not like being black, gay is the same as being black now. I mean, it's not the same thing. So, you know, discriminate away, you know, because Jesus. And no passes can be given here. Let's remember that this bill was driven by the right-wing fundamentalist religion industry. Yeah. Not the Sharia law demanding Muslims, and it wasn't Hindus, and it wasn't Buddhists, and it was not like hardcore right-wing some hardcore right-wing Jewish synagogue. And no, this was done by Christians, the same people who 150 years ago were in the pulpits hollering that the Bible supported slavery. Just, we have to be cognizant of history. Under the subject line, Achtung, Ron in Raleigh wrote, "We're number one, everyone else is wrong." Oh, mercy. So we will take our top of the hour break and come back with your nominations, your conversation for this here Moran Monday. You know how to reach the program, I trust. 304-658-3333 is the traditional phone number if you want to get through on the Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. This breaking note from Jeremy in Vermont. Tastes like rubber and Velcro. Yeah, it's the little fuzzy part of the tennis ball that gets me. It kind of tickles the gag reflex. And, yeah. Thank you, Jeremy. At Bob Kincaid on Twitter and Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Reach out any way you prefer. And again, thanks to everybody who responded and met Randy's challenge and Randy's Moran Monday challenge. And we are now on the way to trying to reach our evening's goal of $215. So with profound thanks in advance, we will take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. With thanks to Ron and Raleigh for the bumper, I'm Bob Kincaid. Lynn. From a ways back, sex. And well done, well called, well DJ'd, Ron. Thank you very much. Going right to the phones in just a matter of a moment or so, a late-breaking nomination coming in from ASA. Does this qualify as a legitimate nominee for Moran Monday? Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has signed into law a bill that toughens penalties against gay people and defines some homosexual acts as crimes punishable by life in prison. It most certainly does. And just remember, those laws came about as a direct result of people putting money in the plate in fundamentalist churches and making donations to fundamentalist organizations who then used the money to lobby for the anti-gay bill in Uganda. There's that tithing for you. Oops. And to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'm on speaker. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, it works better when you're not on speaker.
Well, I want to congratulate you on your network. It's a great stuff. You're broadcasting out and from where? Because I'm from Kansas.
Yes, I'm from, and I'm in the hills and hollers of what was once upon a time a beautiful, beautiful place called West Virginia.
West Virginia. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's a great thing that you're doing this show, and we're new listeners, and in Kansas, and we're real happy to hear your voice on the internet.
Well, I tell you what, it's really good to hear from you because we've got a number of listeners out there in Kansas, Stan, and our only hope in these little isolated pockets of weirdness is to band together. You know, as a line from a favorite movie of mine goes, all we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it.
Yeah, you do hilarious imitations of the colloquial accents of the people there locally.
Oh, no, this isn't an imitation.
Well, it's funnier now. I'm sorry, man. But I'm from Kansas, and my name's Mike Adell. And I just want to tell you, man, that I'm really impressed every time I listen to your show. And we just love, I'm spreading the news about Horn Radio Network and telling them. And I want to tell you about what's going on here with, now you're calling it Kansakistan?
No, Kansastan. K-A-N-S-A-S-T-A-N, Kansastan.
The local natives call it Brownbackistan. Of course, these are Democrats who are good friends of mine. And we there's actually songs about Brownbackistan. And because I think they think if they get rid of Brownback, they can get rid of backward notions of the people that elected him and a super majority.
Well, but wait about what about that? What about that crazier to sprayed roach attorney general? Is he still attorney general? That Klobach guy?
Oh, Chris Klobach, Secretary of State.
Oh, yeah. Secretary of State. Okay.
Well, you're on the right track there. Kansas,
he's got some big dreams, right?
Oh, he's going to go to Liberty University with Phil Klein. He'll be, you know, if he can't get a job anywhere else, he'll end at Liberty University and with Phil Klein teaching constitutional law.
I'm sorry, that just makes me want to run rabbits, constitutional law.
Well, that's what these teabaggers do. We were listening earlier about Milton Wolf, you know, Dr. Wolf, is some kind of guy, you know, but he's sort of a challenger to Pat Roberts, who had a quote hit piece done on him in the New York Times because it was pointed out that he never really lived. He hasn't lived in Kansas for over 20 years. That really hurt Senator Pat Roberts. Oh, I feel his pain. But really, you got to think about Senator Pat Roberts as the water boy Semper Fi Marine who never gave the second as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee during Bush 43. He never delivered the Senate intelligence. He's chairman.
Right. Well, I remember because my senator was the ranking minority member when he was chairman.
Oh, I did.
John D. Rockefeller IV of West Virginia.
And he scrawled some little note, didn't he? About
that was always a great moment in heroism, where when he found out what was it, domestic spying? Yeah. He had to write it in his own hand and tucked it away in the safe of the Senate Intelligence Committee cloakroom. Remember all of that? And he couldn't even do it
weird.
On his own typewriter.
Right, it was weird.
Yeah, because he was afraid that I guess Dick Cheney would come and confiscate the typewriter ribbon and found out that Jay dropped the dime and well. You know, next thing you know, you got to, no. We can't have Rockefellers at Guantanamo. You understand? I mean, it just isn't done.
Well, exactly, and that's where Pat Roberts comes from. He's a water boy, quote unquote. He calls himself a water boy for the establishment. And Milton Wolf is just really some gadfly that hangs around the Kansas Republican Party, and because of Koch money, KOCH. And their enormous funding here locally with the American Legislative Exchange Council, the ALEC people, they have dominated state politics here in Kansas for decades, going all the way back to Bob Dolan. Interestingly, abortion was used as a cudgel against almost everybody, anybody that opposed them. If there was any link to abortion, that was considered the accepted weapon in order to beat people. And I frankly think the Kansas Democratic Party, who I have enormous respect for, but then again, I worry that they have never really rose to the challenge of fighting back on.
Mike, the fact of the matter is, I mean, it's got to be tough because you don't sound like. You're chasing after the little things that the little imaginary things that flit in front of your eyes, or you know that, you're, that you're, you sound perfectly well grounded in reality. It's got to be a little tough to have a book written about your entire state. You know what's the matter with
Kansas, right?
I wonder,
this is an exclusive for you, Bob. Thomas Frank, a great writer, a very eloquent, gifted writer. I happen to know the guy distantly through emails, and I got to tell you, the guy was from Mission, Kansas, which is one of the most elitist parts of our state. And
isn't that just like a very nice neighborhood just to the west of Kansas City?
No. It's actually a very...
Oh, that's Shawnee Hills. I'm sorry.
I mean, Mission, Kansas is he comes from the elite.
Okay.
Thomas Frank. Now, I think to his credit, he did in his documentary and in his book, which I've read both and watched the documentary, give credit to J.A. Weyland, the Appeal to Reason. The Appeal to Reason was the largest socialist weekly newspaper in the history of the United States, and I'm kicking my dogs around right now because I'm telling you straight up, Thomas Frank, really, I think he's sort of kicking back right now.
Well, I agree, but you know,
he's in a state of wonderment about these crazy laws being passed by the legislature this season here that we're in right now. I mean, these are incredibly reactionary laws by neo-Confederates.
Well, and see, Mike, that's the problem, and it's a problem I share with you because, you know, here I am, I'm not a liberal. I'm way too radical for that, really. but I'm in West Virginia, and there you sit in Kansas. And in both cases, do you ever find, I mean, what would happen to somebody who just walked up, political campaign, knocking on doors, going, hello, I'm normal. Please vote for me. I mean, does everybody answer the door with a little picture of a fetus on their shirt or something?
What about the snowflake babies?
That's Brownback. That's Brownback. He did that. He comes back to Kansas after several terms as a senator.
Oh yeah,
and comes back here, takes over as governor. A huge machine funded by the billionaire Koch family out of Wichita, Kansas. I mean, now...
Yeah, that is their stomping grounds, isn't it?
Oh, dude. I mean, we're talking serious 200... You know, we're talking $2,500 donations every campaign to every state legislature here in the state, just like... it's just reliable. And plus, there's all kinds of unknown legal, bribery going on as a subterfuge on the industries. Koch Industries is a major player. They do not employ that many people in the state of Kansas. They're involved in refineries and pipelines and fertilizer plants in Oklahoma. They are, and Charles Koch, here's where if you want to go to the root of evil, Charles Koch is the philosopher king. Charles Koch in Wichita, Kansas, he stayed there. David, his big brother, who goes to New York City to be a playboy and bangs ballerinas, he married a ballerina, and he gives good money to the liberal PBS affiliate.
Oh, right. I mean, I can't tune into
science.
I can't tune into Nova or something without, brought to you by a generous donation from the Koch Foundation. I'm like, damn it!
Well, I mean, you know, David is sort of the, what would you call the liberal wing of the John Birch Society.
That's just funny.
Charles, warrior, philosopher, king here in Wichita, he is the actual guy who, I think really fundamentally, you know, I'm being candid with your listeners, but I think he got stoned on a bunch of marijuana back in the early 70s after listening to his dad, Freddie Koch, bitch and complain and start the John Birch Society. He was
right, because Fred Koch was more than happy to do business with Stalin until Stalin stiffed him, right?
Well, it was over the oil refineries. Freddie built the oil refineries, and then suddenly the goddamn communists, they wanted a cut for the rest of their lives, and Freddie didn't agree with that amount of the cut, and he came back a confirmed anti-Stalinist and was a founding member of the John Birch Society, all based up in Appleton, Wisconsin. But Charles' dad, really instilled in these boys at the point of corporal punishment, he would send them off to the ranches. They own 110,000 acres out here in southwest Kansas, and they own ranches down in Texas and all the way up to North Dakota. He would send them, his boys, David and Charles, out to these ranches as a form of corporal punishment, because they deviated from the anti-communist John Birch. You know, John Birch Society was big. He was starting it. And these boys, and each of these guys are worth $44 billion each. They really took a liking to that licking. And they realized that if they're going to inherit this empire, it really has become an empire now.
And isn't there a third brother?
There's a couple. There's Fred Jr. and William, and they had a huge fight here in Kansas over it. I've got cops that have told me horror stories about having to protect these jackasses, who are friends of mine, and they talked about how when this family, well, this plutocratic billionaire family start fighting with each other. The cops are just like, well, on the one hand, they like the overtime, but really what they really were intrigued and fascinated with was how these rich SOBs were fighting like cats and dogs over the future of their financial empire. And this is going back to what I think 80s or not in the 1980s and 1990s. So Kansas, all evil comes out. This is the state that killed Dr. George Tiller, straight up killed him in his own church. This is the state that has Fred Phelps, the Westboro Baptist Church that just campaigns all over the country. This, you know, somehow a state, the first state that actually fought against, literally with blood and guns, fought against the slave hunting bounty hunters that came over from Missouri in 1850s and burned down the city of Lawrence, not once but twice, to preserve slavery. We fought against slavery. Here with this state, a state of modern
bleeding Kansas, right?
Bleeding, yes. This state has been turned upside down by these wackadoos, based on the weaponized gospel of what they consider Jesus Christ. They have turned it upside down through the courtesy of Governor Sam Brownback and a super majority in the state legislature and the Senate, turned it into, under the guise of the Tea Party.
Naturally.
Have turned it into a hellhole, a dystopian hellhole. And it is really a fight worth fighting, and and it's happening here, and we're not leaving. Although I gotta give you this, Brother Bob. I'm sorry, but I gotta give this to your listeners. You know, I am so tired of liberals in Kansas using the word, quote, embarrassment, unquote. You do not need to be embarrassed, whether you're in West Virginia, Kentucky, or in Kansas, in these so-called red states. You stop being embarrassed and start fighting back. You've got to get out there in the streets. You've got to do your own podcasts. You've got to do your own blogs. You've got to Facebook, and get out in the streets, most fundamentally at critical times. That's what's going on. And, I got to tell you, this thing recently that came in, John Stewart on the Daily News, about spanking your kids and outlawing gays. I mean,
yeah, I caught those.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, the way Kansas is submitted for ridicule. And I think, frankly, we deserve it because our liberal friends and our socialist friends need to get out there and mobilize themselves and mobilize their friends and relatives. I have, you know, I come from a long line of Republicans. I'm not a Republican.
Got over it, did you?
But, I mean, I come from, my family is affected by my political behavior. And even if...
Wait. There's I come from a long line of Republicans, and there's Republicans now, okay? Because to have been a rock ribbed Eisenhower Republican,
right,
is not the same thing as even being a Nixon Republican, is not the same thing as being a Reagan Republican, and none of those things are the same thing as being a modern Republican, which is actually some sort of like paleo fascist.
So,
come on, I'm a registered Democrat and always have been, but I maintain no illusions about Democrats and Republicans here in West Virginia. West Virginia Republicans are just crazier than a sprayed roach, and West Virginia Democrats are largely a bunch of spineless appeasers of the coal industry. I mean, I saw a news story today that referred to Republicans in the West Virginia, no, I'm sorry, liberal Democrats in the House of West Virginia House of Delegates, and I went, who? Who?
Right.
Who qualifies? Because I follow it fairly closely, and I'm damned if I can figure out who they are.
Right, and I will send this to your West Virginia listeners and your listeners out there. You know, here in Kansas, it's blown up in their faces. Governor Brownback is extreme. We're talking 33% favorable attitude among registered voters. That doesn't even count all the poor bastards. That,
and he runs again when?
2014, this year.
That's what I thought. See, that'll stay there until somebody is nominated from the Democratic Party to run against him, at which point his numbers will begin to rise because the Democrat who has been nominated will be accused by Brownback and his entire machine and the Coke, you know, the Coke creeps and everything of, you know, having, you know, fetus juice on their cornflakes.
Well, now, here's something to throw at you and your listeners. Paul Davis, who is running for, he's the minority whip of the House. He's the leader of the Democrats in the state House legislature. Paul Davis is running against him. And I got to give this to you, whether it's good or bad. Paul Davis is avoiding all the, what do you call it, social conservative. He doesn't, abortion never touches his mouth. Homosexuality never touches his mouth. All he talks about is that I can run the state financially better than loop-de-loop Brownback with his experiment, which is really Brownback's experiment is from Laffer, Art Laffer, who is they paid him $75,000 to come in as a consultant, $75,000 to tell him, well, you just don't pay, you don't tax the rich people.
That's yeah, and he Laffered all the way to the bank.
Well, you're right. I think he goes back your way.
But see, that's the thing. It, I mean, you've got real world problems in Kansas, and you know, America relies to a certain extent on certain stereotypes. And you know, after we got past the whole bleeding Kansas thing and that little dust up 150 years ago,
right.
We began, you know, the free soil movement. The progressive movement, a lot of that stuff begins in the farming communities of Kansas when where the independent farmers were being squeezed out of their existence. And
well,
that kind of
Bob, I got to tell you this: in 1880 through 1890, actually up to 1900, there was a political party in Kansas called the Kansas People's Party, and it was a progressive populist farmers movement. They just swept up from Texas all the way up to Kansas, and Kansas became a battleground over it. And it, they actually took – we had two governors, Governor Leedy was one of them, and Llewellyn, I think, was the other one. And it turned into a pitched battle, and these what I call unreconstructed Republicans. These are Republicans who were not for reconstruction of the South. Back after the Civil War, these unreconstructed Republicans literally used guns and lynch mob violence to come in and take over the state house after these people won elections. They actually won elections and brought in two governors. And it's called the Kansas People's Party. It's a great book by Eugene Clanton, C-L-A-N-T-O-N, Eugene Clanton. Called the Common Humanity, and you can get this book. And this book, I've handed it out to senators, Democratic senators, and very select, moderate, so-called moderate Republicans here in the state legislature, trying to reacquaint them with the history of progressive populism. And you just don't get that. I mean, and you know, of course, this book is a tome. And, I hand it out from season to season. But I got to tell you, Bob, there is a huge history, deep history of progressive populism that
absolutely
goes beyond partisanship, you know.
No, it absolutely does. And that's kind of where I was heading in the first place. A lot of what we value as liberals, progressives, socialists, radicals, social democrats, whatever we are, it had its origins in the people next to the soil in the heartland of this country. And it joined up to a certain extent with the burgeoning, with the young labor movement in the early part of the 20th century. And I think it's part and parcel of why you have the backlash that you have today, because they are determined to kill it and to make sure that it can never grow again. But in the background, and this is largely because of how sensitive I am to water and air issues, because of where
right.
I am.
Right.
You guys have a looming problem out there that no amount of saved fetuses can help.
That's the thing about listening to you, because you mix that stuff.
But the
western third of our state right now, the western third of our state for the last 2 years has been under a drought similar, if not worse, than California.
Absolutely. And the thing is, your aquifers are tapped.
That's right.
Everything that has been relied upon for the last 100 years to make Kansas the fertile, magnificent breadbasket that it was is going away.
Well, it's because we shifted, many of my neighbors shifted to growing GMO corn. And they even called it, Monsanto called it drought-resistant corn. And out in the western part of the state where there's no water at all, you got the Colorado River running through there, and it's like a creek. Governor Brownback proposes, rather than telling the farmers to stop irrigating, farmers in the western part of our state irrigate. They continue to irrigate, and they have a strong lobbyist power in our state capital to continue to irrigate. You know what? The fact of the matter is, Governor Brownback can't come up with an excuse any longer. So many liberals are worried about the Keystone XL pipeline coming through. That's not the Brownback's plan on bringing a pipeline from the Missouri River into western Kansas. That's
right, because somewhere up at the headwaters of the Missouri, there are some little Keebler water elves who are just making water. And so we'll put an eight foot pipeline in, and everything will be fine. But that's bull. The story that I read, I just looked it up real quick. It was published on the 13th day. No, I'm sorry, the 20th day of May 2013 in the New York Times. Uh-huh. Wells dry, fertile plains turn to dust.
Right.
And notes that the High Plains aquifer is just flat given out. Now, it took a couple of 100,000 years of the sparse intermittent rains that fall through there to save up all of that water in the aquifer. And in the course of 100 years, it's been frittered away.
Well, it's worse than that, actually. Out here in the, I live in the northeast part of the state of Kansas, the not-off corner of the state of Kansas, and we rely on the Ogallala aquifer, and that's I have a well. I use a hand dug well from 96 years ago, and that provides me with water. It also provides the villages next to me, 8 and 10 miles away, with water. And those wells have dropped 10 feet in the last 10 years, and I've lived out here 15 years on this farm, and it's dropped 10 feet in the last 10 years. And we have to be very careful.
Right, whereas out in the western end of the state, according to this article, 60 years of pumping have reduced groundwater and aquifer levels by literally hundreds of feet.
Oh, yes. I do not doubt that.
So, we talk so much of the time, Mike, about the fact that within the next 100 years, two-thirds of Florida is just not going to be there anymore. And we'll be talking about the Gulf of Arkansas from what's gone in the Mississippi Delta area. Well, meanwhile, because we talk so much about sea level rises, we tend to overlook the fact that the desertification of the area of this country that feeds this country is way, way, well underway.
Yes, You're right.
And a guy like Brownback or any of these other goobs have no solutions. None.
Well, I've got to give you this. I'm going to give you this information, and we can agree or disagree with our liberal audience. But there was a governor over two decades ago named Governor Mike Hayden. He was a Republican. And he said, I couldn't believe it when I heard this, but he sparked my curiosity. Why would he say this? He said, we need to just give the western third of Kansas back to the buffalo and the Indians and run all the white people out. That's a Republican governor 20 years ago, because he watched these computer models, and he'd had some very educated people come and talk to him and talk about this, the depletion of the Ogallala water reservoir, and he decided, and it was political suicide. He was only a one-term governor, an outdoorsman, and a quail hunter, and he was ruined, politically ruined, because of that one statement about what was called, quote, the Buffalo Commons, unquote. And
oddly enough, though, from a sustainability standpoint, yeah, he was probably absolutely correct. I disagree a little bit with the, you know, give it back to the Indians part of it, because that presumes that it's of no value, and therefore what would you know,
exactly,
upstanding, God fearing
exactly
white people want with it.
Here's the alternative, Bob, and this is what's happening. It's going to become like the Sahara Desert. You're going to see Death Valley come to western Kansas. My neighbors, we just, you know, the drought is going to get worse and worse and worse. We're politically, I don't know how to say this, Bob, on your show, and I'm sorry if I offend your listeners.
Oh, I don't think you will.
I haven't listened enough to it. I listened to it. I've listened to like five of your broadcasts, and I love what you're doing. It's very important what you're doing. But I got to tell you, man, old people have to die off. If they can't change their attitudes, that's who voted Brownback in. I feel terrible because I have, my mother is a septuagenarian. I'm 59 years old, and you know, they just keep voting over and over. If there's an R at the end of the name, they voted in. And I that's what happens.
And they sit there watching Fox News all day long.
And the young people have smartphones, and they don't vote. The young people have got to really get serious.
I don't think you're pissing anybody off. But these are serious questions, and the youth side of it may be the more serious question, because what I've seen here, at least, is we got young people that would no sooner go vote than they would stomp their own foot.
They'll vote for Obama on the national, but they won't vote for what's going on in their local backyard.
I mean, it was a few years ago here. We had an off-year election. No. Maybe it wasn't even. Yeah, it was an off-year election. And I think the total voter turnout in my county, and, you know, granted, it's West Virginia, it's not huge or anything, but the total registered voter turnout in my county was something like 32%, which means
right,
that 17% of the registered voters of this county decided who would be the political leadership for the entirety of this county. And when you look at it in terms like that, I don't think you can talk with any sort of credibility about democracy anymore. Because
yeah,
that isn't that. That's not democracy. It's not at all. But you've got people who don't simply have given up on the entire process of self-governance, because people certain sectors of the culture have been very successful at convincing people that there is no difference between Republicans and Democrats, and that there is no real point in voting. And the thing is, here in West Virginia, I've said it before, everybody gets a giggle out of it, we don't have Republicans and Democrats, we have Colocrats and Colicans. And so, like I said, the one side of them are just batshit crazy and would put coal dust in baby formula if they thought the coal industry wanted it, which basically they do. And the other side will say, well, can't we just give you some more money? Well, all right. And so there is no difference, and it's hard to engage in that argument. But by the same token, there has to be some sort of rejuvenation. What you said earlier about calling on liberals, progressives, whatever we call ourselves, to, you know, get busy and get out there is very, very true.
Yeah.
Because look, look at this, the Dr. Doofus there, challenging Pat Roberts. You know, the teabaggers are actively engaged in reshaping and reforming the Repig-Lickin' Party. Now, if it turns out that they wind up committing political suicide, well, good. But the thing is, they're not going to commit political suicide in Kansas, and they're not going to commit political suicide in Alabama or Mississippi or Idaho or places like that, because still got a base there. You know,
the Kansas Democratic Party hasn't fielded a candidate, and she's a good candidate, but you don't hear anything about it. You hear Dr. Milton Wolf fighting with Pat Roberts, with the New York Times saying, I live in Kansas, even though he hasn't been here in 20 years. You know, I think it has to do with the opposition. And, you know, I don't know.
Consider that crazy-ass Beat the Children a Little Bit Harder bill was introduced by a Democrat in Kansas.
Right! Gail Finney. Gail Finney out of Wichita, a Democrat. Right. And there's another one. I don't even know why. They're women. Democrat Jan Pauls has supported and proposed these draconian laws against homosexual public employees. Now, you know, the first thing is, many people think that this is just an a discrimination law against homosexuals, but for business owners. But actually, what it really is a so-called, it's named religious freedom bill to allow ambulance drivers, prison guards, police officers, public school teachers, anybody who receives a state of Kansas paycheck to refuse services, their services, of who they think are
might
gay
be,
or,
kinda, and see,
kinda, right.
Whether it's Kansas or Arizona, that essential question comes to bear, and that is, how are you going to find out?
Well, as a public employee, why should you? You took an oath to the Constitution of that state, and that is irrespective of the sexual proclivities of these people that you're servicing. And
look at Arizona. Let's assume that this thing becomes law out there, right. You know, because it's passed the legislature. It's on Jan Brewer's desk. Let's assume it becomes law. Well, let's say I'm a business person. Let's say I'm running a restaurant. And I'm gonna use the cloak of this. I'm gonna hide behind the skirts of this religious liberty thing. What happens when a Republican comes in and I look at him and say, I refuse to serve you? Because it's been my experience that most of the really weird, closeted, sexual deviant sickos are Republicans. And so, you know, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out, you fundamentalist freak. You know, they don't think about that kind of thing. What do they want? Pink triangles on people's clothing? Oh, okay, well, we won't sell him a hamburger. Because that's about the only way you can pull something like that off. And by the way, you're getting fan mail, Mike. Kate just wrote in and says, great call. Ask Mike where he heard of the horn. And she says, it's always great to hear new callers. Great historical info that I didn't know. And then Jeremy in Vermont also said, hey to Mike and everybody listening out there. Always great to hear a new voice and welcome aboard. What a lovely little family we have here.
I have to confess, I heard of your the horn through Dr. Ann Christian Newhouse, who is a sweetheart. I don't like using the word wife. A sweetheart of mine, 30 years. I've been a friend of and lifelong companion of hers for 30 years, and Dr. Ann Christian Newhouse turned me on to the Horn. And she is the last living link in Kansas to Dr. George Tiller, who you heard earlier on the show about why she gave a small donation. And, you know, I want to tell you something about your show that means a lot to us. This is so important that we take our media back, and we find the tools to do that. And whether it's on the Internet or on the radio waves, we had local people here in Kansas, northeast Kansas, try to get us to start up a low-power FM radio station. And then they've offered thousands of dollars to help us do that. We've reluctantly done that because we have not done that. But we have considered it. But this is what, while we have the Internet, while we have Bob Kincaid on the Horn Radio, Talk Radio Network, and the Angry Indian, while we have...
Angry. Oh, okay. Okay, now it begins to make sense. Yeah.
No, listen.
My buddy.
It's very important, Bob. Bob, this is very important. We need to find ways to be autonomous where we can exist, energy and food. We have to be able to live on our own and generate our own publicity and do this. And that is what is so valuable.
Well, see, that's so neat that you're tapping into that little bit of zeitgeist, I guess is the word I'm after here, Mike, because one of the things that I always dreamed of doing with the Horn was, you know, not just to do this program, but to make it possible to see an absolute proliferation of liberal progressive media all around the country and, you know, for anyone interested, all around the world. And what, because, you know, you mentioned people have offered thousands and thousands of dollars to support the startup of a low-power community FM. But the problem with a low-power community FM, and I'm not denigrating anybody's efforts here, please understand. But the problem with a low-power community FM is in the first two words, low power. And that means you are limited in the scope of your reach. Whereas for probably a 100th of the money that would go into setting up a low-power FM and God knows the bureaucratic nightmare of an FCC license and everything that goes with it and making sure that nobody ever says booger on the air, you can teach people who want to do this, and there are people who want to do this, do it over the Internet and reach, you know, not just the bitten off corner of Kansas, but the whole state, the whole nation, and the whole world.
Well,
and if we could ever find some, you know, that mythical George Soros out there writing all those checks, if we could ever find somebody who would fund the Horn to do something like that, so that we could go out and, borrowing from the religious lexicon, be missionaries of creating a liberal media, broadcast media, I think it would be a huge thing. It would be monstrous. I mean, it would be...
I think it's happening. I think it's starting happening on our own, and it's not as fast as we want it to be. But look at Air America. Air America fell flat on its face for lack of it.
Air America fell on its face, not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but this is something that I studied at some length. Air America fell on its face because of its essential model. There was a point in time when the Horn, and this is way back, when the Horn was producing 2 hours to 4 hours less per day of original content than Air America. At the same time, Air America was hemorrhaging $85,000 a day.
Right.
Okay? It doesn't have to be that way. And frankly, if everybody says, you know, Bob, you need to write a book. Oh, hell, when? But if I was, I could probably start with this topic and have a couple of hundred pages in a few days. Just talking about how not to do this and who isn't helping. And one of the things you have to get in on at the ground floor, you know, really an existential understanding before anybody heads off into this, is that the only way this works is if the people who want it at least at its outset, are willing to support it. Okay?
That's right.
Because,
right.
I mean, we've gone knocking on doors, civil rights organizations, women's reproductive health organizations, labor organizations, environmental organizations, and I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about a lot of different people have done this, and they all go, well, I don't have any money. We'll be happy to provide you guests. And you're like, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I mean, I can do this. Never mind the guests. Just help us keep the bills paid. And that's why we've learned to do this on, you know, pretty much a razor-thin edge. Somewhere out there, you know, we're willing to do a little bit of teaching, because one of the things that happened in terrestrial radio, Mike, is that, you know, way back in the day when I got started, it was possible for a little pimply-faced kid who couldn't get hired at McDonald's to get hired at the local gospel radio station and spin the chuck wagon gang Vestal Goodman Records, get paid for it and learn the broadcast gig. Well, that's all right. Gone. So you've got to have somewhere that people can learn how to do this. And, you know, eventually I still want to engage in doing that. By the way, in the time that we've been talking, more fan mail, under the subject line, my Kansas stand, Diane writes, I'm listening to the conversation about Kansas with great interest. Just to mix it up, try teaching at a major land-grant university in the middle of Kansas, where foreign students with their out-of-state tuition dollars are more and more important, and you end up being in an interesting soup. In fact, it is the foreign students that help mitigate the inward-looking reflex here. That said, many of my students...
Let me finish her note.
Diane says, that said, many of my students come from farming communities, and they get community on a very real level. Just don't talk politics with them, and I don't. She says, by the way, we're bracing for more budget cuts at this university, meaning we will become even more dependent on private corporate donors. Administrators here wonder why Topeka is still trying to call the shots when only about 20% of our budget comes from the state. She says, I moved back here to Kansas to teach here while helping elderly parents. My dad died 2 years ago, and to his dying day was asking me to listen to Rush. To his dying day, I said, hell no, and our bond of love got us through the weirdness. What is really weird is to share certain values like resourcefulness and family cohesion, yet be worlds apart politically. And that comes from Diane, who is obviously also in Kansas Stan.
Wow, that's great stuff. That is great stuff. You know, we have to think about this. It was less than 30 years ago when I went to university that I could literally, if I was smart enough, pass exams, get scholarships, and paid literally just a few hundred dollars. Education was the gemstone, the actual, really, in Kansas. All right, we come from Kansas. Kansas is sort of a bullshit kind of state, you know. But you could get an education, a public education, here in the state of Kansas less than 30 years ago for next to nothing if you were smart enough. And now it's gotten to the point where education now is 10. I have a 16-year-old son making straight A's, and we're worried how we are going to afford getting him into college without him taking a loan. Loans are the worst thing that can happen to a young person going to public education. You know, Kansas is a beacon of public education that's being destroyed by Governor Brownback and, frankly, the Kansas Board of Regents, who has recently put out a corporate memo saying that they can fire professors who participate on Facebook or Twitter. I mean, this is the kind of fascism that only the Taliban
get. Right, and see, anywhere that you've got, because the idea of accessible higher education is at its very basic level one of the most progressive ideas there is. And so it is necessarily one of those things which must be most thoroughly, and I mean, you know, burn it down, turn the stones, salt the earth, destroyed. Because if you've got all kinds of all kinds of hoi polloi going out there and getting edumacated, well, then they're going to be a hell of a lot harder to push around and drag around and lie to. The entire Repig Lickin' and Teabagger and Right Wing and John Birch and all of that philosophy relies entirely upon the ignorance of people.
Yeah, and they want to keep us ignorant. They really do. And it sucks because people are being, young people, my 16-year-old and others that I talk to of his, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-olds, you know, they're just like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'll get a student loan. That is horrendous. They're less than 30 miles away from one of the best universities in the country, University of Kansas in Lawrence.
Sure.
In Lawrence, Kansas. And this is a town that was burned down twice by people in, who wanted to keep slavery.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Lawrence is a wonderful community. It's a beautiful...
Well, see, once upon a time, a million years ago, I started college out at a little tiny liberal arts affair in nearly smack dab in the middle of Missouri, and we would periodically road trip over to Lawrence and Manhattan.
Oh, really?
So what you're describing is not entirely lost upon me. I know what you're... And, in fact, one of the Horn's longest and most stalwart friends and supporters, our buddy Scott in Sweden, got his graduate degree at one of those great universities in Kansas. So, you know, there's a reason that it drew the way that it did, and it was because there was a hunger for knowledge there that was fostered by a progressive attitude that said that, you know, in a place like this in the middle of the country, we've got to have brains. We've got to have education. We've got to be able to rise above the simple simple dreadful exigencies of living by drought and flood.
And we'll be and while we are wheat farmers, we know the fruit of the land. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean because you're a dirt farmer that you have to be stupid. And I've learned that over 50 years in the state. I can't say I learned it as an adolescent, but I got to tell you, there is a wisdom in learning about the land and learning a liberal arts education about the outside world. You can't always travel to Paris, but you can read about it. And you can't always learn about London, but you can watch PBS. And I'm telling you, I think the young people in this state, the young people who emailed and telephone called their representatives, and these kids who may not vote, overturned House Bill. I'm looking up the number. It's right now happening. House Bill 2453, which was a reactionary law going through the and overwhelmingly voted in the House to discriminate against homosexuals. And I got to tell you, man, I was enormously inspired by seeing that bill thrown away. And I must say, it went to the Senate. Here's the dirty secret. Senate Wagle, her name is, I think, Senate Jane Wagle. I'm not sure what her name. She is the head of the Kansas Senate. She shelved that and put it permanently, pigeonholed it into the committee. But here's what the dirty secret is. Senator Wagle is part of ALEC, the American Legislative
Committee. Oh, sure.
And she is a Koch libertarian up the ass. I mean, she wiggled. All she did was blink. All that's happening is Kansas State Legislature about this horrible discriminatory bill allowing state employees to refuse services to people based on their religious freedom. All that happened because of young people who are and gays and the LGBT community, but even more importantly, the young people rising up on their iPhones and their, you know, I mean, it's electronic. And then Jon Stewart goes on it on the Daily News. I mean, it's shaming these goddamn Christians. I'm sorry, brother. I'm sorry to say that.
Don't apologize to me. I don't speak for them.
I mean,
I barely speak to them.
That's not the kind of Christian I am. But, I mean, you have to shame these people into their own stupidity.
Well, what I find fascinating, though, is that, you talk about Alec and the Koch brothers, and, of course, my junior senator here, Joe Manchin, an alleged Democrat.
He's the only
person with a D after his name in the entire United States Senate who is a member of ALEC.
Unbelievable.
I kid you not. But what I was getting at is that, you know, so much toxin has poured out of Kansas. You know, Chris Kobach has had far more influence. You know, he wrote the Arizona Papers, Please bill.
Right. Yes, sir.
This, and they never quit. And this is the latest wave, this religious freedom bullshit defense where, you know, Arizona, Kansas. Well, guess where it's cropped up now, Mike?
Where?
Georgia Stan.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt
it. There's a bill going through the Georgia House of Representatives like through a goose that would, it's called the... Preservation of Religious Freedom Act.
Freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom.
And it prevents indirectly constraining the exercise of religion by making good, upstanding, God fear and strychnine swilling, floor rolling, tongue speaking Christians because they would have to serve the homos in their restaurants.
Well, they got to treat their women.
So,
like,
you know, there'll be one in Alabama, there'll be one in Mississippi. These things, you know, these things just spread through these benighted places.
Sounds like it's going to go to Mississippi.
Well, it will if present events are any indication. Three boys, because I'm damn sure not going to call them young men. Three boys at the University of Mississippi Stan, otherwise known as Ole Miss, have been expelled from their fraternity chapter, and the fraternity has been suspended from its national fraternity because they had this neat idea that they was going to take the old they's all from Georgia, these three, but they went to Ole Miss because so I reckon they couldn't get into Georgia. So they went to Ole Miss, and they took with them an old Georgia flag that still had the Confederate battle flag on it.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
And so the other night, they went and draped the Confederate flag portion of it over the head of the James Meredith statue on the campus of the University of Mississippi and then put a noose around the statue's neck.
Unbelievable.
I kid you not.
That's the neo-Confederacy. What I call the neo-Confederacy that Governor Brownback represents, and many of the members of the House of Representatives and the Senate here in our state house in Topeka, Kansas, they are, you know, what Fred Phelps at Westboro Baptist Church did for years, they're trying to do now. And this, they don't like that. They don't want to tell you that you should kill abortion doctors. They do not want to tell you that you should discriminate openly, brazenly discriminate against members of a homosexual community. That's what is amazing about Kansas right now. It is so upside down from the fights that we led in our past. And there's so many moderate, quote-unquote, moderate Republicans in open revolt against these crazy son-of-a-bitches. That's where it's at. We've got to get.
Well, how bad has it gotten, Mike? When George W. Bush's former political director or whatever he was, what was his name, Matt Dowd, comes out and accuses these people of being Christian Taliban. Because that happened. It happened. It really did. George W. Bush's political said, no, these people are freaks. No.
Well, they are freaks, and they're very dangerous freaks. And here in Kansas, a lot of wonderful, nice, old people are voting them in. And they don't even realize they'll be dead. I'll be dead before it happens. And then it happens. In 2 years, it happens. Brownback's proposing these draconian laws. If your gay grandson or granddaughter is out on the road in a car wreck, the Highway Patrol doesn't have to do anything for them. They could just die because they might be homosexual. I mean, you know, that's literally what they're doing. They're trying to say, no, I'm serious. I'm serious, Bob.
If we just allow enough of them to die in car wrecks, they're not breeding anyway, so then they'll just go away and we'll all be happy and straight.
Well, here's the problem.
I mean, that's how it works, right?
There's a lot of Republican grandparents who have gay children.
Well, there's a lot of gay Republicans, please. I mean, they've got their own organization.
Well, I won't even give that to them. Not out here in Kansas.
No. Absolutely.
But among the
there's probably no sex in Kansas at all. I mean, y'all reproduce sort of like from spores or something, right?
Only when it's designed to procreate.
Exactly. See, right. When God smiles upon you.
There is no pleasure in Kansas. You can quote me on that. There is no pleasure in Kansas. And it's coming to West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We had we got one of those 20-day, 20-minute, whatever, abortion bans introduced in the House. And, for heaven's sakes, you know.
Well, you know, I want to tell you, I really appreciate our time together. And, you know, sometime I can hook you up with some people in Kansas who really know what's going on. I'm an observer, and I am not a Democrat or a Republican. I am an unaffiliated, independent voter. I love Bernie Sanders out of Vermont. I wish is there room in West Virginia for Bernie Sanders?
Oh, God. See, I don't think so.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's why we spend a lot of time knocking on Senator Sanders' door with the AIC Act, you know, in our attempt to get some relief for mountaintop removal, because no, there won't. No,
I'm elbowing my room here in the Kansas political rooms for there is room for Bernie Sanders, and we independent Democratic Socialists in all of our states. And I want to tell you, Bob, you're doing a great show. I'm so happy, so happy to meet your show, and I will promote it, and many of our I have people who need to listen to your show, brother. I mean that.
Well, I tell you what, it tickles me to no end to hear that, and tell them, you know, the whole goal here is to expand the conversation until this turns into a 6-hour program.
Right on, brother. Right on.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the call. It has been a wonderful conversation, and I hope it will not be our last.
It will not. And any time we want to talk, let's get on it. I'll talk to you about Kansas politics and let you know what's the worst coming your way from Brownbackistan.
Yeah, from Brownbackistan, look out.
Duck. That's right. Thank you, brother.
You take care, Mike. It's been a joy.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling, yes, from Kansas, our new buddy, Mike. Thanks very much, Mike, for a wonderful conversation. And I really do. I hope it will not be our last. Diane with another note. She, social media and the Regents policy at Kansas State Just so, Diane says, just so you and your guest know, our faculty senate immediately pushed back on that social media policy for professors that was abruptly mandated right before we all left for holiday break, what Mike was talking about with judging professors based upon what they say online. Diane says, the regents have had to reconvene and regroup regarding that misguided policy. We tenured professors are a special breed. We don't necessarily take to such command treatment. By the way, years ago, our faculty senate issued a statement breaking with the Board of Education policy at the time against teaching evolution. Our biology professors really balked. Well, what do they expect? Diane asks. Yeah, just forswear everything you've ever learned and agree that the dinosaur bones were put in the rocks by Satan to confuse the unbelievers. Why not? But thanks going out, by the way. We are now at $105 away from meeting our evening's fundraising goal here at 10 minutes past the hour. Thanks very much, Glenn. Thank you indeed. And with any luck at all, we'll get there and get up out of the hole a little bit. Let's keep it rolling. Lines open, by the way, 304-658-3333 or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Either way is fine by me, whatever works best for you. Hey, welcome to the program.
Tremendously interesting call, Bob.
I thought so, too, Bill.
Yeah, when people start talking, and all of a sudden I'm getting hit with, like I'm sitting on needles from all the things that come back to me as they talk. For instance, the farmers, and politically, in the 1890s and 1880s, well, they were getting screwed so bad by the railroads. That was really
hard. They were getting robbed on haulage rates.
Yep.
They were getting robbed at the grain elevator.
Yep.
They were getting robbed from the moment the seed went in the dirt.
It seems to be in this society or this economic system, as soon as there's something going on, some guy who already has a pocket full of money figures out ways to even load his pockets more.
Isn't that the game?
Yep.
Well, you know, voracious reader that you are, one of the things that I got to thinking about when we started talking about progressive origins and things like that, L. Frank Baum, who wrote the Wizard of Oz series, was not writing a charming little series of books about a little girl who wants to go home.
Absolutely not.
It is set in Kansas for a damn good reason. And the whole thing is a giant allegory of capitalism versus progressivism.
Yep. Yeah, he was very much a progressive. There's a pretty good bio on him that I got through the talking books, and it really opened my eyes because my mother was buying me those books in the early 50s. I was collecting them, and I gave some to my daughter of what I had left. Remarkable for a guy my age to have those. In fact, I have a book that my mother rebound in high school. The title is Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. And he brings things into his writing style. I think I've talked to you about the a group called the Whimsies. I believe it was called Whimsies. Where it was people had rollers instead of legs. And I'm choking on a potato chip. These people, these mythical people who created the Flatheads, they were called. That's where the name came from. Because they didn't have a place to put their brains, so they carried their brains around in a can on their belt. And somebody came along and stole all the brains from everybody else, and his name in the book was the SU-DIC, as in Supreme Dictator.
Mm-hmm.
Steal the brains. There's a little message there, isn't there, Bob?
More than a little one.
Yeah, when you consider what that book was written in the early 1900s, for God's sake. And, you know, he mentioned Lawrence, Kansas, and my God, what a... being a Civil War buff, I'm pretty familiar with them. Twice they burned the city? The border ruffians were what they referred to the Southerners as. And I saw cartoons. You know, that's one thing about this country. We've always had political cartoonists. And the political cartoonists are probably in Massachusetts. They had a picture of two of these border ruffians. One of them had a Bowie knife in his mouth, and oh boy. That was a great encouragement to the people in this nation respecting each other, wasn't it? Even though it might have been correct, it's still, that kind of stuff is what can sick people on each other even worse. But he made some points, so with just the darn, well, who was it? Say, I remember one of the county fairs out here, which was one that had a big following, a lot of Amish folk out there, and a lot of other farming going on in one county slightly south and to the west of Cuyahoga. They had a great county fair every year, which I used to go to. And, of course, being a culturally enhanced person, I always made sure I had a ticket for the name of the joint where they'd crash the cars?
Oh, the Demolition Derby?
Demolition Derby. Hell, you had to see that. And eat all the wrong stuff. But I remember the Grange had a place that sold the best homemade pies that you could get your hands on, you know? And you had to take a couple of those home with you. And, yeah, that was they were a throwback. The Grange was a throwback, I believe, to the farm movement.
Yes.
Because they were getting nailed. They would, if you find something, Bob, these guys will find a way to economically crucify you. Now all this internet talk, you know. Like one of my buddies I know is listening, and I hope he's listening, because I'd like to see him, because I'd like to get some email installed. Because those guys did an awful lot of good for me, and I said, Colin ran a story in the PD, which was almost, it was so bad, it was almost humiliating, Bob. It made me sound like a complete moron. I was damned lucky that one of our listeners called and got the police at my door to say, come on with us, fella. Because I didn't realize there was anything wrong with me. It strokes are funny that way.
Yeah, well.
But it was there, and it knocked me for a loop. And they ran an article the other day about the musical career, and I've been getting calls all day from people. It's like, I didn't know you were still alive, Bill. Well, thanks. Maybe I don't smell like it. I don't know. But in all seriousness, though, what was being said?
Yeah, come spit in my eye and find out.
Yeah, exactly. The your prior conversation, this is so much of the same stuff that I heard during the Vietnam War era. And I wonder what happened to the spirit that was pushing that so hard that between the at-home stayers and the men who went over there and fought and came back almost with a psychological shoulder shrug and saying, what the hell was I doing there? I heard plenty of that from friends of mine who were veterans, who had been through some of the crap. They couldn't for the life of them understand what good we were doing.
Right, and they were sent over there by a generation of parents
yep.
who said, well, you know, I mean, I answered the call when it was time to go fight the Germans or the Japanese. You know, it's your generation's turn.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe it takes a little while in the heat over there to realize that that was not World War II.
No.
And the stakes weren't even the same stakes that were on the line in the Korean conflict.
Korea, no. Because Korea was an open and shut case of a man who was basically a Stalinist. And his thinking patterns, and I cannot commend Mr. Stalin. I can't turn around and say that the only thing I can commend him for was not sidling up to Hitler and joining hands with him.
Well, you know, they tried that for a little bit.
Yeah.
But Hitler had his fingers crossed.
And Stalin, according to what I've been able to gather and read, he was working on his own plan to go to war with them.
Yeah, one beat the other to the punch.
Yeah. Because these Europeans hadn't got past the World War One situation yet. That Treaty of Versailles was a complete massacre. And then along came a financial depression, which, you know, I'm not a financier. I mean, I was pretty good at saving a dollar and spending it wisely. I have one fishing rod that I paid maybe $90 for, but it took me 9 weeks to pay it off, too, you know? I mean, it's no cheap son of a bitch, you know? I can't help it.
Yeah, but that was a tool.
Yeah, that was a tool, all right. In fact, some of my pictures have got to be brought back. I had one picture of me on the wall. A picture was on the wall. I'm holding a 9-pound walleye that I got off of the shoreline at 4 o'clock in the morning when they came in to chase the shad. That's one hell of a fish to not be in a boat and catch. To catch standing on the shore of the lake.
Wow.
But we who were fishermen, we talked and we knew that when the shad started to head in, they headed for a warm water discharge from the Cleveland Public Power water discharge from the generating plant. And the water temperature hit about 52 or 3, they started moving. I mean, it's like everything else. A good deer hunter could tell me things, because I never hunted. That's one thing I never was attracted to, was hunting. Because it was...
I tried it, and I didn't much care for deer hunting because I'm a terrible shot. I kind of enjoyed bird hunting because it made for a very enjoyable meal at the end of a successful day.
What kind of... Were you talking duck or grouse?
Grouse, when you can find them. They've become very rare around here. But mostly... I hate to say it, but, you know, pheasant on preserves.
Oh, well, from what everybody's told me, that eating the things, they taste pretty darn good.
Oh, but the breast is delicious. There's not a lot you can do with the legs except maybe soup, because it's all tendon.
Yeah.
But it makes a great soup. I used to do when we would go out and go wing shooting, we'd bring them home, and I would, with the legs... I would do a lentil soup that was just magnificent.
Well, you...
And you just have, you cook those legs forever and ever and ever, and then you have to pick it away from the little tendons because they're sharp and spiky. But, yeah, it was yummy.
Well, I got to be a pretty decent cook with the... Even with the charcoal briquettes, you had a chimney. You ever use one of those?
No, I live by them.
Yeah, that's, I'm glad to hear that, because that's what gets those coals going. That and an old electric hairdryer. You get a hairdryer at some secondhand store for $3, and when those coals are getting warm, you hit them with a hairdryer. It's what do the farriers use, the blacksmith? Bellows.
Yeah. It serves as a sort of a...
Yeah, it heats everything up,
Well, in the last few years... One nice advance that's been made is, I guess there's a company out there that takes old hardwood pallets, like stuff is delivered on.
Yeah.
And they reduce them to charcoal in kilns.
Yeah.
And then so there's no glues or anything like that, like there were in the old briquettes.
Exactly.
And I load up the chimney with that whenever I'm going to smoke something on the smoker and get that going real good. And then, once you've got a base of coals like that, just chunk on a little bit of fresh hickory, seasoned hickory every so often, usually soaked in water, and just keep a nice slow fire. And next thing 16 hours later, you got barbecue.
Yeah, the smoke is what delivers the flavor.
Oh, without a doubt. But the thing is, if you let it smoke too hard, it'll make the meat black and oily.
Yeah.
And ruin it. So you can't let the flames get up too hot. You get up much above 225 degrees and you're in trouble.
Well, you get me I was using a double burner gas grill and I had a rotisserie on it, which was nice. But with steaks, you sear them at first, and then you move them. What I used to do with a lot of stuff, it was being cooked off the coals. The coals were going in an enclosed situation, but you weren't smoking it as much. And that's pork roast and such.
Right.
I don't know, my mother had taught me cooking. She was such a sweet person. She'd say, Bill, the way you look, you're never going to get married, so.
I better teach you to cook.
I'll tell you. But in all seriousness.
Mother's love.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, my first wife, she was, crab dip she would make that was. I'm playing one night, and I'm standing by the bar waiting to get paid after the job, and some woman walks up and says, was your wife named such and such? I said, yeah. He said, man, she makes a tremendous crab dip. I haven't talked to her since the health incident, so I'm going to put the lean on her for some crab dip. Or,
oh, wow.
Well, she also used to make chicken liver, chicken liver.
Oh, yeah, chopped liver.
Yeah, in the deli style, and my second wife cooked the livers in onions and gravy of some kind. That was tremendous. I was lucky. I married two of them that could really, and it spilled over to me that I had to, I had to do a little bit to take my part in contributing to the household good. I was a damn good house cleaner, too. That was the other thing. Well, you get to a point, if there's not a car to work on, go find something to do. And if it's not fishing season, find something to do around the house and fix it. You know, that was the theory, plumbing, whatever, Whatever you could do, you did it, because that way you could, money was put into savings. That was the whole idea. Was to try to, because, and I ended up on the wrong side of that coin after being with a second woman for 12 years and watching the money disappear when my eyes went to crap on me. But, yeah, that was a great call tonight, because his knowledge, Kansas, bloody Kansas, yep. But then again, I've heard things on the other side of the coin about the Jayhawkers. There was some pretty nasty people who were anti-Confederate, too. But I think you hit it on the head, because violence begets violence and builds up a strong dislike. And once that pot is boiling, everybody's liable to get burned badly by it.
Somebody like John Brown, back east, the hardcore abolitionists, after his raid on Harper's Ferry, were kind of careful about being... Well, some of them were kind of careful about being overtly endorsive.
Yeah.
But a number of them said, well, can you blame him?
I think he had kids that were killed by the other side, didn't he?
Yeah. There's a little bit of, he said, she said in the whole thing, as of course there always is in any sort of civil strife. Oh, by the way, just got a note from Randy. He said, my mom's chicken liver recipe involves onions, Campbell's mushroom soup concentrate, and lemon juice, and it's great on toast.
Oh, man.
Oh, God, here we go with the food porn at 8:26 and me anticipating my bowl of the fancy ramen with the soup booster.
Well, my biggest gripe about where I'm living now, there's only two idiots to deliver, and one of them is bad sub sandwiches, franchise crap.
And oh, I can't even walk into Subway anymore. It's just awful.
Really?
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, I'll go with the fancy ramen first.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm still not cooking the way I should. I just got enough ground beef, and I'll have my health aid get it going for me it's seasoned with Cincinnati chili mix, which, as I said, has a lot of stuff in it. That's a whole different kind of chili than the usual.
Oh, yes.
It's what you usually get on hot dogs.
And, it's funny, around here, most people recognize a chili dog as a chili dog.
Yeah.
Around here, it's not, and I don't know why, but it's not even referred to as chili on a hot dog. It's just sauce.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the...
And it's like Sloppy Joe, only without nearly as much zesty stuff in it.
Yeah, it's not hot. It's got a certain sweetness to it, the way And I fell into it. I was playing in Cincinnati in some off-beaten folk rock club, probably 68 or 9. And we were there between, John Mayall was there the week before us, and I forget who was there after us. But, you know, we just got lucky and caught a good booking one time. Well, we caught a lot of those in those days. I had a good kid working for me as a booker, and he turned out to...
Well, you were running in some pretty impressive circles too.
Yeah, well, it was a time and a place, Bob. I mean, look what you did with you were involved with radio, and who am I thinking of that comes on not on the same station as you, but because you guys have a group meeting with him on Friday night.
Oh, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group.
Yeah, Mike Malloy. Malloy is. I think he's out of Toledo originally.
Yeah, he is.
And I think he went to school.
Or is it Dayton?
Pardon?
Toledo or Dayton, and I can't remember which.
Yeah. And because I spent some time playing in Toledo, but I got a bad booking there. They booked me in some pop music place, and this was 67. And these people couldn't quite figure out what the hell we were doing.
Hey, Bill, I've got a recommendation for you, and I don't want us to finish our conversation without making sure that I pass it along to you. Even understanding your visual limitations,
yeah.
If somebody can hook it up so that you can either watch and or listen to this, I think you will enjoy it immensely.
Well, I've got no way to receive it right now because I don't have a the guys that set me up other than the guy who set me up with the radio stations, who lives south of here, around Akron, he did a wonderful job, but I haven't heard much from him lately. I'm going to call him later because I haven't talked to him. But
well, we got to figure out a way to get this particular documentary to you. I was watching it last night, and it's been out for about a year or a little more. And the name of the documentary is simply Muscle Shoals.
Oh.
And it starts with the very, very origins of the recording industry in Muscle Shoals and comes forward. And for anybody that loves music,
yeah,
I mean, this is...
one of the greatest horn sections in the world and recording studio people.
And it covers everybody who was everything in the early days. It's, you know, it starts out with the first hit. It goes up through, the people who do appearances in it. I mean, the Stones are in it. Aretha Franklin's in it.
Yep.
Clarence Carter's in it.
Well, Stax used that horn section, I think, was used at Muscle Shoals also, the same thing.
And it is, I mean, just to hear the audio of it, I think you would just enjoy the daylights out of it. So maybe some of us can make a project out of getting that to you.
Well, you know, Dwayne, you've heard Aretha Franklin's version of The Wait, the band song?
Yeah. Yeah, we played it on here one night.
Yeah, and you know who that was, of course. On the slide?
Yeah, Dwayne.
Yeah, Dwayne Allman, yeah. I mean, those... See, that was...
Well, see, he camped out and basically lived in Fame Recording Studios during the early, early part of his career.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the studio. That was, I mean, God almighty. And there's some stuff you can find on the Internet with Stevie Vaughan and Albert King working together, side by side, the two of them playing on a video. And because, man, when I first heard Vaughan, I said, man, somebody's really got Albert King down pretty good because they're still real close. And one of the biggest thrills I had of playing live was when guys from the Thunderbirds came in. Of course, Jimmy Vaughan, unfortunately, wasn't with them, but it was the singer. What the hell was his name? The guy that sang for the Thunderbirds, him and their drummer came in and played with us one night at the Euclid Tavern, and you talk about having your hair stand on end. Kim Wilson was a harp player and great player. He's out of Detroit. The guys were just hit. This music was hitting it all over the place from every direction. I mean, look at Elvis, for God's sake. What did he record? He recorded one by an old blues singer. That's All Right, Mama.
That's All Right, Mama, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Wasn't that what he... Was that the Louisiana Hayride appearance?
It could have been. And then the DJ, Bill Randall, who was pushing him around Cleveland in 55, in fact. He came in to hear us one night at a place we were playing called the Brick Cottage, which was It's funny. There was a mile, less than a mile down the street from the Euclid Tavern, so I went from one to the other, stayed in that.
Yeah, I saw some reminiscences in print the other day of your appearances at the Brick Cottage.
Yeah. Who wrote those, I wonder?
I don't know. I just I got them in the form of a link and just sat there and went, wow.
Well, this one guy who played with me in the first version of the band, he was a trumpet player as well as a... He wasn't the greatest guitar player in the world, but he later... He was a... I didn't even know this, but he ended up being a part of the early Rolling Stone. His name was Eric Ehrman. And somebody, Colin, I think, dug it out off the internet. He said, Bill, this guy was writing for Rolling Stone. I said, yeah, he was a decent Dixieland trumpet player, but he wasn't quite as good. I mean, I was blessed with guitar players that were just really good, including Glenn Schwartz, the guy who played with a West Coast band. He did a song called Are You Ready? But Glenn had a bout with religion, so forget that, you know?
Yeah, it kind of puts the end to it real quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, Pacific Gas and Electric was the name of the band he was working with. And they were... Because he went out to the West Coast, and then I was asked to go out to San Francisco in about 67, and I just was too... it just wasn't me to get out and travel. I never had that kind of confidence or whatever it took to... Or even wanting to. I was kind of a... Well, I was pulled out of my house at age 9 and put... Because of some problems my mother was having, and they stuck me in this Catholic children's home for 4 years, and I don't think I ever recovered from that little episode. That was a... Here's the wheels, Bill, and here's hell. Get on them and go. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Well, Bill, I'll tell you what, it's been a good conversation. I hope maybe we'll figure out some way of letting you listen to at least the soundtrack of that, because, you know, the early story of Percy Sledge.
Oh, that was tremendous studio. Tremendous.
And just how everything came to be, I think it'll just, well, I think you'll just sit there and rap.
I got into it, like Ann Peebles and a lot of Al Green stuff. I don't know if Green was working there or not in Muscle Shoals.
Maybe, not sure.
I know he was using the drummer from Booker T's group for a while because the drum sound was so identifiable. You know, that's what happens. You listen to enough stuff, but just... I remember a guy who had a thing going on the radio one night, a live radio show, and he played a Dixieland record, and I called him, and I said, is that King Oliver? He said, how'd you guess? It wasn't a guess. I just heard enough of it. Anyway, you take care of yourself.
All right, you have a good evening, Bill. Good. Thanks for the call. Bye now. Our good buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And, hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, good afternoon, Bob.
How are you, Kevin?
Good evening now. Good. Getting ready for the next wave of the polar vortex.
Oh, Jesus. How bad is it going to get for you?
I haven't heard the exact figure, but I know I got a breaking news alert that said it was going to... Temperatures were going to plummet. It was 59 about an hour or so ago, and I guess the cold front's just getting here to us because we're just starting to get the wind and everything. But they say it's going to be part of the polar vortex. We're going to catch the back end of it, so that should be interesting.
You know, it's not going to be as bad here as it was with the previous incarnations, but still, around here for late February, a low of 14 on Wednesday is going to suck a lot.
Yeah, that's probably what we're looking at, too. I know last night it got down, and that was before the cold front. We got down to, like, 19 or so. So, you know, I would guess, without having looked at a weather forecast, that it'll be around zero around here. But as long as I'm warm inside, you know. It's sad, though, because we do have homeless, and so I always think of them. Years ago when I worked at a truck stop, we used to have this guy come in. He was homeless, and he was obviously mentally ill. And I always tried to encourage him, you know, when it gets this cold outside, go to a shelter, and he wouldn't do it. But he would come into our store about 11, 12 o'clock at night and fill up 3 water bottles. And that's how he kept himself warm. got the water as hot as he could, filled these water bottles up, went back to wherever he was at in the woods, and bedded down with those three water bottles, I guess, placed under each arm, and, you know, kept himself warm.
Mercy.
So,
I had a note from our buddy Steve earlier today, sending me a link to a story out of Montana. It simply said, as last week's freezing temperatures dropped to minus 4 degrees and included more than 7 inches of snowfall, the elements were too severe for a 61-year-old woman recently evicted from her home to be able to survive. According to the Hamilton Police Department, the body of the Hamilton, Montana woman was found near some bushes behind the Super One Foods grocery store in Hamilton, Montana, at about noon on Sunday. And I, whether it's what you're talking about or that horror story or the horror stories that repeat themselves night after night after night in this country, Kevin, how dare we call ourselves the greatest country on earth?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just to ask straight out, do the French, the Germans, the Poles, the Russians, the Swedes, the Canadians, do they let their elders just freeze to death in the night? Well, maybe the Russians, because you know they're into the whole hardcore capitalism thing now. But does any nation that considers itself anything resembling civilized let that happen?
No, and that's exactly what I was thinking when you began to read the story.
How is it that a state that experiences extreme cold doesn't have a law providing for some sort of humane treatment of people in an eviction situation?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, if I said something like I want to kill myself, people would be right there. You got to go to the hospital. You got to get care. But if I'm evicted from my apartment or house, the cops come, evict me, and that's that.
See, I remember a long time ago now, back when I was on terrestrial air back here in West Virginia, the sense of outrage that I felt one evening with a story about an intellectually, mentally disabled woman who had been released from hospital after giving birth to an infant, and she went back home, and the gas company came, and this was just a few miles away from here.
Yeah.
And the gas company came and turned her gas off for non-payment, and the little infant froze to death.
Yep.
Now, I mean, we hate us some abortion here in West Virginia. And I remember people being outraged that I said, you know, I don't have much sympathy for anything on earth that would happen to that gas company employee.
No.
And there was a bunch of right wingers, and they were allowed to call in and stuff. Well, he was just doing his job. Hell, I thought you believed in right to life. Well, I mean, I do, but I mean, you know. So, but I mean, somebody who would do that to another human being, what call do they have for any sympathy anywhere on planet Earth?
Well, it seems to be one of the national pastimes of the right wing to outlaw homelessness whenever and wherever they can. And when you do that,
the sad thing about that story, though, Kevin, was the woman had a home.
Yeah, but it's still the same thing. They cut off her heat with no regard for the consequences, and it all revolves around the same thing. They claim their right to life, but it's only their version of right to life, which means a fetus can't be aborted, but once a child is born, he's on his own.
Yes.
And
on. I remember we had this real bizarre, weirdo, right-wing member of the House of Delegates. No, I think he was in the Senate, maybe. Total paranoid maniac. And called in one afternoon because he was all upset at me and wanted to talk about the little fetuses. And I said, Buster, do you feel like you're responsible for every unborn baby in West Virginia? He said, I sure am. I said, does your wife know?
Yep.
And I said, but then again, you don't give a hoot about them after they're born now, do you? Oh, he didn't like that.
Yep. They definitely don't like truth when you put up truth to them. And I actually forgot what I originally called in for now.
I'm sorry.
Getting on this subject is, you know, because I guess Florida and Colorado, two of the most recent places I've lived, have both tried to outlaw homelessness. I mean, literally, you can't sleep in a park, you can't sleep on a park bench, you can't sleep in the woods. You know the story. You've seen it time and time again on the internet where cops come in and destroy an encampment and throw away things. And so where are these people to go? It's just pushing the problem on someone else because they're just going to migrate to the nearest city that it hasn't outlawed homelessness. And the problem doesn't get dealt with, you know, and that's what's so maddening about it. And I dealt with homeless when I was an EMT in Florida, and there was a portion of them that were mentally ill, but even back then in the early 90s, you started seeing people who weren't homeless for any other reason than they lost their job in their home. And, you know, like this guy that I had coming in filling in the water bottles, he was mentally ill enough, he was schizophrenic. By some of the stories he told me, I could decipher that. But you couldn't have got him to go to a shelter. So I don't know what you do there, unless you forcibly remove him from the situation. But for the people like that woman who died because she lost her home and was living in back of a shopping center, I guess it was, and
yeah,
Close to death. Now, how can we even call ourselves not only the greatest country in the world, but a civilized country? And
I think you kind of call civilized into question while we're at it.
Right, that's what I mean. How can we call ourselves even civilized when we allow people to die in the cold? And, you know, even then, these shelters only allow so many people in the shelter at night.
Well, I mean, they have fire codes they have to adhere to.
Yeah, right. And the fact that they also have, when they kind of break those rules and just allow anybody in at all, is when the temperature goes below a certain level. Well, you can die of hypothermia when the temperature is in the mid to upper 50s. And people don't understand that. So if you've got a rule...
You can die of hypothermia in 80-degree water.
Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about hypothermia out of water.
Oh, I know, but I mean, yeah, right.
And I don't know if you probably remember this back in the 80s. I forget her name, but she was like the Black Widow killer, and she had escaped from prison. She ended up dying on the doorstep somewhere there in Alabama trying to get help for herself because she died of hypothermia. And it wasn't all that cold out that night, but it had rained, and it had gotten cooler, and she wasn't prepared, and consequently she died. Now, she kind of made her own bed by doing that, but the point is that, you know, how more does that happen every day somewhere where someone dies and it doesn't make the news media, it doesn't make a headline that someone froze to death simply for lack of shelter. And anyway, getting off that depressing subject, I do have to say I enjoyed, what was the name of your first caller?
No, that was Mike from Kansas.
Mike, okay, yeah. And being a border state to Kansas, and you know, we're well aware of what goes on there in Kansas over here in Colorado, so a lot of empathy towards him. And I was glad to hear Bill call in, because Bill doing a few sports references there, and, you know, we kind of need those every so often.
Good and good for you.
Yeah. You need those diversions. It's only when those diversions become permanent diversions that I have a problem with them. But there's times that I just have to turn off all the political news and everything and, you know, kind of get lost in the game of some kind, usually football or baseball, and kind of forget about things. But that's for a three-hour period. You know, I don't just completely ignore. You talked about the young people not voting, and there's a good deal of that going on where, to heck with it, we won't vote, we can't change anything, so we're just going to check out of the system altogether. And I've seen that personally with some of the help that I have coming in to help me. They're young, in their 20s, and I've tried to get them to see where, you know, you need to become politically engaged, because it's your generation that's the next one up, and, you know, this is going to affect you directly. And not all of the younger generation is like that, but I see it a lot. And it scares me, because if that younger generation doesn't become politically active on a large scale, it goes along with the Fox News Tea Party meme of, you know, the longer we can divert people's attention from the real issues, the better off we are. Because if we're diverting people's attention with these non-issue issues of abortion and education, gotta teach creation, all these emotional issues keep their followers from looking at the real issues and what's being done to them, like poisoning their water and air, mountaintop removal, et cetera, et cetera. And anyway, I just wanted to make kind of a note on that, because...
Absolutely. By the way, you got a follow-up from Beth in Texas. She said the woman you were thinking about was Marie Hilly, who finally ran out of road and ended up dead on a back porch in her hometown of Anniston, Alabama.
Yep. I remember that story very vividly, because I was just amazed that at that time that she died in such quote-unquote warm weather. You know, if I remember right, it was like 59, 60. But it had rained, she was wet, and like you said, you can die of hypothermia in 80-degree water. So, she was a killer, she was an escaped person, but, you know, that didn't mean I took any satisfaction of her dying in the way she did.
No.
I guess what I'm saying, you know.
No, not at all. Well, Kevin, it's
but
good
anyway,
to talk to you, and you have yourself a good evening, and for heaven's sake, stay warm.
Oh, yeah, the wind's starting to blow now, and when it gets this high, it gets cold in here, so I've got the apartment preheated up to 75 in here just to account for the temperature drop that's going to happen. So, but anyway, I will let you go, and you have a good evening.
I'm going to try. We're going to work on the warm thing, too.
All right. Take care.
All right. See you, Kevin. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Calling from Colorado Springs. That's our buddy, Kevin. So it's time to wrap up. It's about 6 minutes before the hour. We'll put a bit of a punctuation mark on this Moran Monday with a little bit of a GERT update. Do you have GERT? Unfortunately, here in West Virginia, we have GERT in a bad way. GERT being Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. You remember when we talked back at the beginning of the month about how students had gone back to school only to have school administrators, school employees mostly, teachers, and some students become sick with the fumes, the vapors, the noxious, toxic vapors of methyl chlorohexane methanol. You may recall Friday night we had the story of how the GERT administration had to be Freedom of Information Act requested in order to release data that they had on ongoing presence of MCHM in water supplies. Well, guess what? Apparently, the GERT administration has this not releasing information to the public problem. Because while everybody found out that school was turned out as a result of the fumes there at the school, that was a Wednesday. It was February the 5th. It turns out GERT's administration knew that there were still fumes in the school on the previous weekend, 3 days before the school was closed and the children and the people who worked there sent home. On February 2nd, which was a Sunday, Amy Schuler Goodwin, this in a story, by Mackenzie Mays and David Gutman from the Charleston Gazette. On February the 2nd, which was a Sunday, GERT's communications director, Amy Schuler Goodwin, sent an email around to health and safety officials in the state about the fact that, she writes, this is the email, "All, I have had 3 calls today about Midland Trail Elementary. The cook has rashes from using the dishwasher. Someone has suggested to them they need the hot water tank drained, and maybe someone to help them flush. Who can help me with this? Parents worried." That's when, a little while later, the Major General of the West Virginia National Guard writes back and says, "Midland Trail Elementary was non-detect at 10 parts per billion. Collected on 128 at 1354 hours. Would have to defer to BPH, Bureau of Public Health, on other reasons." So the general says they know that the stuff is there, but no, nobody's flushing, nobody's emptying water tanks, and 3 days later people are being carried out to the hospital with fumes. And still no one is calling for GERT to absent himself from the office whose duties he is discharging so utterly, completely, and totally ineptly. Wow. Then again, George W. Bush received a little old CIA daily briefing, said Bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States. And he said, "Give that to Brownie, and I'm going to go cut some brush."
I guess that's how we work in America now, right? So thanks, everybody, for joining in on this brand new week, this 24th day of February, 2014. Thank you very much for your More and Monday nominations. Thank you for your kind phone calls and excellent conversation. Thank you to everyone who helped us meet and exceed Randy's More and Monday challenge. We find ourselves with $100 to go in order to catch up with even. So tomorrow's fundraising goal will be something on the order of $250. Thank you one and all for helping us keep all of this going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben had to take time out of his busy day today to reboot the Horn servers, and really do appreciate that. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHEACT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.